The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the Accent Radio Network or the staff, management, and sponsors of this radio station.
You're listening to American Radio with Dave Champion.
Thank you so much for staying with me for hour number two of American Radio. As I told you during the first hour, this hour we're going to have a very special guest. Most of you who listen to American Radio are very familiar with a very sad turn of events concerning Dixon Cannon. Of course, not to give up hope, not to give up faith, because of course there is an appeal, and I think there's a very good chance that on appeal a lot of what Judge McBride did is going to be seen in the proper light, and I think that Dick's sentence is probably going to be vacated, and it'll be returned to the lower court for reconsideration. However, it's important to look at the entire tax honesty picture, including and especially the tax honesty picture that goes on in the courtroom. Dixon Cannon has been a focus of attention for quite some time, but not long ago, there was a very brave lady who stood against the IRS, and she ended up being acquitted of six counts of tax evasion. And I think it's important to focus on her story and that success in the second hour of American Radio. Bernie Kuglin, thank you for joining me on American Radio.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. You know, I want to settle something before we get going. I know you love Bernie, but what is the proper pronunciation of the full name?
My full name is Bernice.
Bernice.
Right, Bernice. However, it seldom ever gets pronounced correctly.
Well, actually, one of our American Radio listeners sent me an email. I guess he'd run into you at the We the People conference.
Oh, yes.
And he sent me an email. He said, just a heads up, the way you've been pronouncing it, Dave, is not the way that it really is pronounced. So I wanted to check that with you. How was the We the People conference?
It was awesome.
Oh, it was good.
It was awesome. I was thoroughly impressed with the caliber of speakers that were there and the people who were there, and it was just wonderful.
Were you one of the speakers?
I was on the panel with Joe Bannister, Sherry Jackson, John Turner, Irwin Schiff, and I'm sure I've left some other people out.
All excellent people.
Yes.
About how many people do you think attended?
Oh, I think there probably were 100 or more people who attended.
Oh, very good, very good. Not bad for the first year. Hopefully that'll continue to build.
And it may have been more. It was a large auditorium, so my count could be very... And it was difficult because not everybody was there all the time. So it could have been, you know, well over that amount.
Right, and I've heard numbers ranging up to a couple thousand, so it's probably someplace in the middle.
Oh, okay. It could be. It could have been 1,000, you know. I was not in there a whole lot of the time because people were stopping me in the hall wanting to talk, and so I didn't get to listen to as many of the speakers as I would have liked to.
Exactly. First of all, congratulations on your acquittal.
Thank you.
Why don't we start back at the beginning and we'll work our way forward.
Okay.
Like most of us, there was probably a time when you filed returns and you thought that we all had a requirement to... that we were liable and that we had a requirement to file, and we did so. I know I had that period of time in my life. It was the majority of my life.
Same with me. The majority of my life, as far as my working life that was concerned, I was filling out my 1040 forms like everyone else was until 1992 was the last 1040 form that I filled out.
What happened?
Well, I had been listening to C-SPAN one Saturday, and I heard the Libertarian National Convention having their nominating speeches for their presidential candidate, and I was quite intrigued with what I heard, so I called the 800 number, got the information, and ended up at one of their next year's convention. And at that convention, Irwin Schiff was one of the people who was vying for the presidential nomination, and I heard what Irwin had said. I got his book, The Great Income Tax Hoax, started reading it, and then that really started my research. And I had heard Larry B. Craft at a seminar that Don Winfield with Boston Tea Party had given, and I read a book entitled Goodbye April 15th. And so as I began educating myself, I also got a cassette series of tapes by a company called Knowledge Products in Nashville. And they had a whole constitutional series on the ratifying debates. And it gave me a really good insight into what the Founding Fathers really intended as far as tax laws were going to be.
What, you know, coming from the position that you were what the government would call a good taxpayer, I think we all have a certain response when we get exposed to the type of material that you're talking about. By the way, I talked to Don Winfield, as you know, last week. Very, very nice man.
Yes, he is. He's been a tremendous help.
Good, good. He really was great. I really enjoyed my time talking with him. So he's part of a group called Boston Tea Party?
Well, he had this group. He was doing 7 hours a while back. He's not doing that. He's doing some other things now. And Don, after talking with him, you realize that he's has his fingers in a lot of things. His main job is to sell freedom, and he gets people connected who he thinks should know each other and work with each other.
That's good. Networking's important. Now, as I said, we all have a certain reaction. When you started to read this material and you started to find out the truth, I guess for lack of a better term, what was your reaction?
Well, initially, I was just amazed. Then I got very angry. And then I decided that I needed to do something with my anger. It was a waste of my time and energy to be angry. And so I then started looking at what my next move would be and whether or not this was an issue that I felt was important enough to take a stand on.
Did you go to sources outside the tax honesty community and spend any time saying to them, look, this is what I've read. Is this true? Could this be true?
Actually, I did. I did not file for 93, 94, or 95, but I did have withholding taken out of my paycheck. And I was pretty sure that there was no place in the Internal Revenue Code that made any American citizen liable for the individual income tax, but I was still afraid of not stopping my withholding. I had made a decision not to file a 1040 because it was not cross-referenced as the Paperwork Reduction Act required it to be with the regulation that that was slated for the individual income tax. And I also went down to the IRS with a friend of mine and asked the questions, the two questions that I've been asking for 10 years, which has been what section of the Internal Revenue Code makes me liable for the individual income tax and what law requires me to fill out the 1040 form. And the agent at that time got quite upset with us and said it wasn't his job to interpret the law for us and that we should go to the law library. Well, we said we had, since we had read the Pollack case and the Bruchauber case and numerous other ones. And he said, well, then go hire an attorney. And it was after that I had met Eddie Kane and his organization that he was starting called American Rights Litigators. And so I used their attorneys and accountants, gave them my power of attorney to respond to the IRS. Now, I had in August or September of 95, I decided that I was going to go ahead and stop withholding from my employer. But just to make sure that I was on the right track, I wrote a letter to the Internal Revenue Service, and I put down all the information that I had, the Privacy Act, Paperwork Reduction Act, the cross-references, the Bruchauber case and Pollack cases, and everything else that I had found that would substantiate the fact that I could find no place in the Internal Revenue Code under the Subtitle A where I was liable for the individual income tax. And I asked them to please read over the information, and if they could tell me where I had missed something and would let me know, that I would be more than happy to pay any taxes for which I was liable. And I asked them to respond to me in 30 days, and if they didn't, I would presume that they had accepted my explanation as to why I was not filing. I didn't get a response, So I sent another letter in October or November of 95 and gave him 60 days this time. And when I got no response again, I completed an exempt W-4 form and gave it to my employer in January of 96.
Mm-hmm. Having been through the anger phase myself, I can relate to exactly, you know, and you're right, because at a point, the anger gets old.
Right, it does. It's very fatiguing.
Yes, and it really becomes, all right, like any other problem in life, I've got to go out and do something about it. And it seems what you did about it was exceedingly responsible. You know, we've all had this experience where we try and get some answers from the service. When I first came to this, Bernice, I sent, I can't tell you how many letters, and of course I got nothing but form letters back.
Right.
Now, interesting, you're probably aware of this, but I want to tell the listeners, your experience at not getting answers is the norm.
That's correct.
On September 16, 2003, there was a press conference held in Washington, D.C., and at the press conference up on stage were Mark Everson, Pam Olson, and Dale Hart. Now, Dale Hart is the commissioner for small business and self-employed. Of course, Everson is the commissioner, and Pam Olson has responsibility over domestic tax regulation.
Okay.
David K. Johnson from the New York Times said, there are some people outside that say that you don't have to file income taxes and the average American isn't liable. They're looking for the answer to the question, what statute within the code makes the average American liable? Can you tell us? Now, here are probably the three top guns in the U.S. tax system. Pam Olson from Treasury, Everson, and Dale Hart from IRS. And, Bernice, it won't be a, I'm sorry, I missed that one. Bernice, it won't be a surprise to you to hear that Mark Everson could not cite a statute, Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. Pam Olson wouldn't even give it a spin.
Mm-hmm.
And Dale Hart, she pushed everybody straight out of the way and said, well, let me try and field this for you. And she directed everyone to the IRS website and told them they could read about tax protesters there, but was noticeably absent. I'm sure they think they got over on the whole crowd. What was noticeably absent in any of their responses was the statute that makes you liable.
That's because they can't give it to you.
Absolutely. I think we've all been asking, collectively, probably maybe a million Americans have been asking. We're still not getting an answer.
Oh, yes. There's a letter, an internal document that the IRS has put out in 1998, I believe it was, where they indicated that their estimate, and this was a conservative estimate, was that over 63 million people were not filing 1040 forms who they figured were eligible.
And on that, let's take a break. We're up against the clock. I'm with Bernice Kuglin. This is Dave Champion, and we'll be right back.
Are you concerned with what you eat and drink? Do you find yourself reading the ingredients of everything you buy and still not know whether you're consuming harmful contaminants? Are we all going to become farmers and chemists, testing our soil and water supplies to reassure ourselves of their purity? Of course not. That wouldn't be realistic. We can't watch everything we eat. It doesn't mean we can't do something about it, though. Daniel Chapter 1's BioMix is the answer. It's a chocolate-flavored mix that cleans blood naturally and is a great immune system booster. BioMix blends easily in water or your favorite drink and helps restore cells that have been damaged during chemotherapy and radiation treatments. Whether you're making sure your body is on an even keel or combating cancer and the deadly effects of allopathic eradication, make BioMix an essential part of your body maintenance program. Call Daniel Chapter 1 and order BioMix today. 800-504-5511. 800-504-5511 for all natural BioMix.
Health Facts Minute, brought to you by DanielChapter1.com. Some look back to see where they're heading. Tracing your family tree has become quite popular. Following your lineage may be more helpful than just satisfying personal curiosity. Between 5 and 10% of people diagnosed with cancer are predisposed through inherited abnormal genes. This percentage could be higher than 55,000 people a year in the U.S. alone. That's not to say we're vulnerable or more at risk because of our ancestry. We all can help prevent contracting other forms of cancer. Consuming less chemicals and avoided extended exposure to sunlight is helpful. Most important is keeping your immune system in tip-top shape by exercise and eating foods high in calcium and antioxidants on a daily basis. Elderly people should follow this advice even more so, since age is also a factor in weakening immune systems. This Health Facts Minute has been brought to you by DanielChapter1.com.
sometimes feel run down? Maybe you don't have the energy you used to, and you go through the day without the normal enthusiasm and pizzazz. We don't always eat right, and our bodies require a great deal of vitamins and nutrients to give us that overall vitality. Here's just a handful of folks who used to feel that way, but not anymore.
That AM PM, I just love it.
The AM PM.
My favorite one is the AM PM.
Taking your AM PM.
You can't beat that AM PM now, really.
The AM PM, it was like having a milkshake.
Daniel Chapter 1's AM PM, the first and the best product available to feed your body the right stuff. Take it from their customers. It's the number one foundation to keep you healthy and going strong. Call Daniel Chapter 1 at 800-504-5511. 800-504-5511. Or read more about AM PM and other all-natural products at www.danielchapter1.com.
Call American Radio toll free at 888-987-3100.
At 22 minutes after the hour, we are back with our very special guest, Bernie Kugeln, and we've been talking about the beginning of her exploration into the tax honesty community. Bernie, after you determined that there was a problem, and you went through the anger phase, and then you went to the let's get productive phase, where were you living? What were you doing at that time?
Well, I was living here in Memphis, and I was flying for a cargo carrier out of Memphis. And I decided that it was time for me to make a decision one way or the other, either drop the whole issue or get serious about it. And so at that time, I made the decision that if I was going to get into this challenge, that I would have to accept the fact that the possibility would be that I would have to face going to jail at some point in time. And I knew that if I did not come to terms with that issue, that I would not be able to take the stand that I needed to take. And so I made, in 95, I made the decision that I would be willing to go to jail if it came to that. But I really, as naive as I was at that point in time, felt that if I was asking the questions, and as long as I kept asking the questions, as long as I never refused to pay any taxes for which I was liable, that there was a certain safety net. And in retrospect, I guess we could say it was naive, but, you know, I don't know.
But it was a good-hearted naivete.
Right, and you trust that if you ask the right questions, that there are people out there who are responsible enough to answer them. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
Or if they can't answer them, leave you alone.
That's correct.
Right. Now,
Right. Now
you said that in 95, you said to yourself, if I'm going to do this, I need to be prepared that the possible eventual outcome would be I'll do some jail time.
Right.
Now, to a lot of people, that's an amazing statement. To a lot of people, that you even thought that to take this stand, you would go to jail and thinking, oh, my God, why did she do that? Bernie, tell the listeners why this was something over which you were willing and prepared to go to jail if you must.
I just felt that we are a constitutional republic. We have the Constitution, which is the law of the land. And I believe that any civil society, in order to remain a civil society, must adhere to the laws, both the government and the citizens. And I was beginning to realize that the government was not abiding by the law of the land.
And I think I can share with the audience, and I don't mean to speak for you, it raises up a sense of righteous indignation.
Well, I also saw a lot of people in working I live in a condominium in Memphis. We have security guards, and at work we have bus drivers who are carrying us back and forth to the airplanes. And these people are working two and three jobs. They're barely able to make ends meet. And I just saw this happening more and more in America. I saw the middle class sort of just fading away, and more mothers, more and more fathers having to work double shifts, and more children being left alone. And I said, this is not correct. This is not how it was intended to be. And I did not want my grandchildren, if and when I have any, to live in a society where they are slaves, basically, to the entity in Washington.
Good thinking. You know, obviously, if the government, let's take the average person, say they pay out 30% of their total annual income to the government. That's merely a discretionary figure. The government could raise that to 90% next year.
Absolutely.
So your point is very well taken. So at the time that you made this stand, were you working for the same company that you're working for now?
Yes, I was. And one of the positions, I was real fortunate in that my son was already raised and out of the home. I'm single. And I felt that being in a high-profile job and a high-income job, that it would be a significant stand to take or a significant example. A lot of people had told me, well, put your property in trust, do this, hide everything. And my feeling was, if I am correct, if we are correct in the truth in taxation movement and there is no requirement, then we shouldn't have to hide our property. We should be able to take a stand to do what the law says, which is that the income tax is voluntary, which the IRS says it is, and not be afraid of what happens to the assets and the things that we have worked hard for. As it turned out, when I went to trial, it was really a pretty good thing because it made my trial very uncomplicated.
Yes, it did. Now, when you went to, I don't know if you had this, by the way, are you comfortable with letting the audience know who you work for?
That's fine.
Okay. You are a pilot for FedEx, I believe.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, did you at any time approach FedEx and say, look, here's my beliefs, or did you just go exempt and leave them out of the equation?
No, actually, when I went exempt, I went into the payroll department and told them what I wanted to do, and they actually showed me how to do it. I also attached to my W-4 at that time all the supportive documentation, same letters that I had sent to the IRS, because I wanted everybody to know that I had made an honest attempt to find out the information, and I wanted the IRS to know that FedEx was aware of the documentation, too, because I didn't want the IRS harassing my employer at the time.
Well, that was very thoughtful. Now, when you submitted this W-4 stapled to all this stuff, what was FedEx's response?
They were very cooperative. They told me how to do this and how to do a property and to mark on the W-4 that there were 5 pages of attachments so that nothing would get lost and such like that. They're very cooperative.
Oh, very good. Now,
they were very aware of the fact that in where it comes to withholding, that the employee is allowed to give them an exempt W-4, and once they get an exempt W-4, that they by law cannot then violate that. And this was their understanding at that time.
Well, it's nice to hear that every once in a while. So we're heading into the break. So when we get back, I want to talk a little bit. We've covered the background, the history, and we're at the halfway point in the interview, so I'm going to want to segue when we get back to talking about when the trouble really started.
Okay.
And how it led up to what your thoughts were along the road, and of course talk a little bit about the trial. I'm going to be particularly interested because I understand that there was a point where they offered you a plea bargain. Is that correct?
No, actually, that's not correct.
Okay, good. Well, we'll get to clear all that up when we come back. This is American Radio with my very special guest, Verdi Kuglin. We'll be right back after the break.
This is Newsbreak. It was a day of bloody violence in Iraq. In Mosul, at least 9 people were killed by a suicide bombing at a police station there. 44 people were wounded. In Baghdad, a residential area was hit twice by mortar or rocket fire. 6 people were killed, and 3 U.S. soldiers lost their lives when a roadside bomb hit their convoy outside of Tikrit. Several British Airways and Air France flights to the U.S. have been canceled due to security concerns. A continental flight from Scotland to the States is also grounded. U.S. officials are worried about a possible terrorist strike by Osama bin Laden's terrorist group, Al-Qaeda. Sunday marks a year since the loss of the Space Shuttle Columbia and her crew of 7. The shuttle broke apart during re-entry following a mission that began on January 16, 2003. NASA grounded the orbiters, but hopes to restart shuttle missions sometimes in March. More news at USARadio.com. This is Judy Hydock.
If you're losing your hair, then I have great news for you. Now you can have twice as much hair within 90 days, guaranteed. Announcing Hair Advantage, the world's most advanced hair regrowth system that is so effective it was awarded a U.S. patent. With Hair Advantage, you'll see dramatic results in your very first month of use, guaranteed. The secret of Hair Advantage lies in a recent medical discovery that showed 95% of all hair loss was due to the body's overproduction of DHT. Hair Advantage stops DHT from attacking your hair follicle as it starts regrowing new hair in balding areas. Hair Advantage contains a patented active ingredient that was approved by the FDA for hair regrowth. In clinical studies, the majority of people regrew their hair, with almost half experiencing dense hair growth. So call now for your risk-free trial, and you can have twice as much hair within 90 days, guaranteed. Hair Advantage is safe, clinically proven, and effective on virtually everyone. Call toll-free 1-800-862-1814. 1-800-862-1814. That's 1-800-862-1814.
I'll bet that very few of us eat a completely balanced diet. Whether by convenience or personal preference, most of us have acquired unhealthy eating habits. For most cooking, fat is not only essential, it adds a lot of flavor. But our blood vessels become lined with lipids or fats, and this could lead to diabetes, heart disease, or even death. Daniel Chapter 1's Vascular Cleanse naturally burns lipids. The oxidation of fat produces heat and energy. This is known as thermogenesis, and this chemical reaction may make a person experience an unusual hot, itchy feeling. Don't worry, it's temporary, and it means the Vascular Cleanse is working. So imagine being able to still eat those tasty foods without so much worry. Remember, moderation is still very important. Call 800-504-5511 and order Vascular Cleanse today. Also ask for the new bio guide. It's a great source of information and inspiration. Call 1-800-504-5511.
And I think you do it, you found a nice little technical way to get out of it. It's kind of cute, but your neighbors are paying for your roads, your neighbors are paying for your highways, your neighbors are paying for your defense, your neighbors are paying the burden of everything, and you get away scot-free.
The issue in this case is, why won't the government answer her questions?
Are you going to advise her to pay her taxes?
I didn't hear you.
Are you going to advise her to pay her taxes?
No, she's going to go off.
Well, that's what we talked about last week in court.
American Radio, revealing the American Matrix.
At 33 after the hour, we are back with our very special guest, Bernie Kugeln. That was Sean Hannity when Bernie was a guest on the show. And just so you know, Bernie, that week I excoriated Sean Hannity publicly on the air.
You and hundreds of other people.
Good, good. I think we were planning to sending him a CD of the portion where I talked about his comments on that show, so he could know that people out there who know what's really going on with the tax law know that he was a complete boob in his knowledge of the law, and he was a complete ass to you.
It was really interesting because we couldn't see who we were talking to. We were looking in a remote camera, and we had no idea. I did not even know who Hannity and Combs were, and I don't think Larry did either. And we had been doing some nice 20-minute Fox News Network show tapings during the day, and we just anticipated it was the same kind of program. So we were not really prepared for the pace at which it was. But when I got home, I had a lot of emails from people who had copied me. Hannity got lots of emails, really chastising him. And Combs called the next day and asked us to be on his radio talk show. And so Robert Bernhoft, who was my Milwaukee attorney, and I were on a Combs show, and we had a very good, about 45-minute show, but have not heard anything from Hannity.
So Alan was a little more polite than Sean, huh?
Oh, yes.
Very funny. All right, so we were at the point, we've got a little bit of history. We know why and when. Now, when was the first time that you knew that it looked like there was going to be some trouble?
Well, we had been getting letters, you know, anybody who has attempted to do this. We usually start out with the 515, 516, 517, 518 letters, which are very nice letters that, you know, we haven't gotten your tax return. Please file it if you haven't. If you have, please send us a copy. Or if you don't believe you're required to, please tell us why. And so we would always answer that last statement, please tell us why, and the attorneys always asked to see the section of the Internal Revenue Code. In every letter that has been written, I've offered to pay. In fact, at a period of time, we even sent the IRS a power of attorney form and said that if they would sign the power of attorney form, that I was giving them my permission to fill out my 1040 form, sign it under penalty of perjury, and I would pay whatever figure they put on that form. And to this date, they have never taken us up on that offer.
Powerful stuff.
Now, there are three different sections. There was 93, 94, and 95 in which I paid in. I had withholding was taken out of my check, but I never filed the 1040 form. So they've got a considerable amount of my money, but they're wanting more and more and more since I won't file a 1040 form and then I'm not able to take all my legitimate deductions. And then we have the trial years, which were 96 through 2001. And when I really knew there was a serious problem was in February of 2003, where I got a letter saying they were sending it up to the Treasury Department for possible criminal prosecution. Now, the attorneys wrote a letter in response to that saying we were going to be asking for my individual master file documents, and once we'd had a chance to review those, then we would need about 30 days and we would respond to them. We got no response back from the Treasury Department saying that was not acceptable, and so I was under the impression that this was the process that was acceptable. So it was really a shock when on March 28th, I believe it was, my son called me and said that 15 agents had shown up at his home looking for me to arrest me, and they had already been in my employer and then also at my condo. But fortunately, the security guards at my condo knew the law well enough that they did not let the IRS agent into my condo, even though she said she had permission to do that.
Oh, my gosh. I'd not heard that one before.
Right.
You know, and especially this 15 agent thing. They are so fearful. You know, the very first time they ever asked me to come down to a hearing, they said, would you come down and talk to us? I said, sure, I'll come down. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
And I went down to the federal building, the main federal building in Los Angeles, and I walked into the room, and there was, of course, the revenue officer and her partner. But opposing me, standing up, was an armed CID agent, and behind me, immediately behind me, was another armed CID agent.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody tell me that they've ever had that happen to them in the IRS's building, in a hearing where you were just invited to come down and talk. Later, when they attempted to seize some property and I was present, they had six CID agents came pouring out from different directions with AR-15s, which is like, you know, big, like,
right,
you know, semi-automatic rifles, and flak vests, and later, and of course, you know, I'm the most peaceful man in the world, unless you're going to come into my home and try and do something to me or my family. And later, I said to the revenue officer, her name was Lisa Hernandez, I said, why all the guns and why are you so uptight? And she said, you need to do a Freedom of Information Act request for the file I have on you. I know more about you than you know about yourself. I know the kind of person you are. I'm thinking, obviously not.
Obviously not.
But they are so fearful, aren't they?
Yes, I'm not quite sure why. I think my feeling right now, and with Sim Cannon and, you know, Joe Bannister and the things that he's going with, and there's a few more, Eddie Kane now is being targeted, and there's some others, that I believe that they are beginning to realize that the lid is off of this, and they can't put the genie back in the bottle. And the only thing that people in power know is force and power and intimidation, and they feel that they can keep control that way.
Well, too bad. We all know that they can't. Well, you know, of course, the ugly thing is the more it gets out of control, the more ugly they get.
Yes.
So that's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
More people begin asking questions. It was interesting that after my trial, I think it was World Daily wrote an article, and even though in the article they were mentioning, we believe that the Bible says, render under Caesar that which is Caesar. And
aren't you tired of that line?
Well, you know, if you go back in the Aramaic, they understood that nothing belonged to Caesar and everything belonged to God. But this is a legitimate belief for many people. However, you have to wonder why they can't answer the questions. And it's been interesting. I think the biggest significance of the verdict of my trial that gave it publicity was the fact that they aren't answering the questions, and people are finding out more and more and saying, why can't they answer the questions? Why don't they just get on national television like they told Bob Schultz they would do and answer the questions?
Funny you should say that, because I wrote a rather lengthy article about We the People and its original creation and the research conference and the questions and the hearing. It was entitled The Hearing That Never Was, which is sort of a takeoff on Bill Benson and Red Beckman's book. And that's one of the observations I made, considering that Bob went through such trouble to set up an opportunity for them.
Yes.
And it was going to be, you know, televised, so to speak. It had to be watched over the Internet. So anybody with a computer and $25 could have heard what the IRS had to say.
Right.
You know, I agree with you. They've had so many opportunities, if they are correct, to show what boobs and morons we are.
Right. I think that, you know, and there's been other people who, Irwin Schiff for years offered a reward, and I think that Pete McCannell's also offers a reward on his radio talk show for anybody who can find the section of the Internal Revenue Code that makes us liable. And so there's been so much opportunity to come out and just say it. I mean, if you're asking about an alcohol tax, it's no problem for them. They say, there's where the section makes you liable, and there's the amount of the tax. But under Subtitle A, individual income tax or income taxes, there's only one section that makes anybody liable, and that is non-resident aliens and foreign corporations.
Right, 1461.
Right.
Now, it's interesting, because I told you that story about that press conference, and Mark Everson's answer was, well, it's just understood that you have to pay. That's from the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. No law, it's just understood.
But the 1040 form says you have to be liable.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of that, you were talking earlier about the cross-reference, and I just want to let our listeners know what that is. The cross-reference she's referring to, if my memory serves me right, it's in the regulations at 601.101. And it deals with tying a form to a specific regulation.
And right. Under the Paperwork Reduction Act, there were several requirements. First, every regulation, every form had to be approved via request from the agency by the Office of Management and Budget. Once it was approved, the information gathering form would be stamped with an OMB number on it. And then the agency had to make a cross-reference showing the regulation and the approved form for that regulation. And the regulation for the individual income tax is 1.1-1. And the only form that has been even requested to be approved for collecting the individual income tax is the 2555 form, which is entitled Foreign Earned Income, which matches with that section you said, 1461, non-resident aliens. If you do a computer search under subtitle A for the word liable, that section is the only section that will come up.
That is a fascinating point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Larry and I have talked about that often.
Now, and Larry, you're referring to Larry B. Kraft?
Yes.
Right.
Now, you and Larry did a lot of preparation for the trial. Obviously, you know him well by now.
Oh, yes, we're joined at the hip.
Now, you've been following the Dick Simcannon case.
Right.
And you know that egregiously Dick was denied the ability to enter into evidence most of his defense evidence.
Yes.
Was there any sort of obstructionism like that in your case?
No. I was very, very fortunate. And as I read more and more cases, I realize how fortunate we were. We had a judge, John McCullough here in Memphis, who is a man that I perceive from everything I've seen is a man who respects his position in the court and does everything that he possibly can, I believe, to provide an environment in which a fair trial can be given. And we were allowed to present our evidence. Now, my two most important pieces of evidence were not allowed in. They were objected to by the United States Attorney, and that was the letters I had written between 96 and 2001. I disagreed with the decision, but I understood the reasoning, because the criminal trial is about intent. And because I stopped my W-4 filing, I went exempt in January of 96, They said anything that I had written after that was not contributing to my decision. So I had the two letters I had written before that. The other evidence that was important that was not allowed in was that on my individual master file, which is the file that is in the IRS on me, has a filing requirement code on it of an MFR-01, means not required to file. So here they're putting me on trial for not filing a 1044, and yet my internal documents, individual master file at the IRS, has a filing requirement code that says not required to file. But since it was after the beginning of 96, that was not allowed in either.
And I'm sure that the government argued that there's both statutory and decisional law that says the filing status indicator on the IMF cannot determine liability.
Well, we didn't even get to that because it was objected to and thrown out in the very beginning, so we didn't even get that far. But I was allowed to give my own testimony, and I did testify for about a day and a half, and just basically laid out the reliance defense. I relied on the Constitution, on the Pollack-Bruchhofer case, on several cases down since then, which supported the issue that the income tax is actually an excise tax but is not being applied that way, and that I also relied on the IRS's own documents and the Office of Management and Budget. So it was all government documents that I used to rely on to come to this decision.
Now, you mentioned Bruchhofer a couple of times.
Right.
You know, there's a very interesting thing from Bruchhofer, and I don't know whether you happen to, it's a very long decision, as you well know.
Right.
And I don't know if you happen to catch this, but the part where it says that the income tax, or tax upon income, is an excise entitled to be enforced as such, it then goes on and talks about, but if the government stops enforcing it as an excise and begins to enforce it as a direct tax, then the requirement of apportionment would come into play.
Correct.
Now, to me, that was the court in 1916, in a sense, both predicting where they could see it going and warning the government and maybe giving us, the people, a heads up that this was an area that was ripe for abuse, and that if the government did take too heavy a hand in collecting an excise, somebody could come to the court and say, it may be technically an excise, but the enforcement procedures surely render it a direct tax, and therefore the executive branch has made apportionment a requirement. We're up against the clock. We're going into the final segment of hour number two with our very special guest, Bernie Kuglin. I'm Dave Champion. This is American Radio, and we'll be right back.
Did you know when you're exerting energy and you start to perspire, your body's telling you, among other things,
hey, my electrolyte levels are down. I'm losing fluid.
So many people just drink water, which isn't bad, but not enough to really revitalize you. Another common mistake is to reach for Gatorade or some so-called sports drink. They have so much sodium and hardly any potassium, one of the most important nutrients. It makes no sense. It's crazy. But there is a product that will give you back everything and more. It's Electrocarbs from Daniel Chapter 1. Mix it into some water, chug it, and you're ready to go. Yeah, your body uses it immediately. It's been designed to be assimilated instantly, just like water. Electrocarbs, used by world-class athletes, 100% natural, sodium to potassium ratio is right on, and your body uses it just like that. Call 800-504-5511. You deserve it, because your body deserves it. Daniel Chapter 1, Electrocarbs, 800-504-5511. Many of Daniel Chapter 1's products have multiple uses. Confused? Don't worry. Can it save you money in the long run? You bet. One of their products, Golden Seal, can cure many different ailments. Golden Seal is antibacterial, great for healing sores and preventing infections. It reduces inflammation, soothes irritated skin, and lowers blood pressure. Besides being used as an eye wash, June used Golden Seal to eliminate styes.
I called last week. Trish told me to use the Golden Seal wash, and in a day and a half, it was gone.
Thanks for calling in, June. That's
was
great.
It was so wonderful because this is the third stye we have. We've battled 2-3 weeks at a time, and, you know, I am just so thankful to you.
If you're still confused for any medical reason, call Daniel Chapter 1 Health Watch, weekdays between 12 and 2 p.m. Eastern Time at 866-222-2368. If you've ordered before, you may already have what you need. If you don't know, call the show, 866-222-2368.
Paul Bedard, double Ironman champion, uses Daniel Chapter 1's biomolecular products for competitions. He's tried other so-called energy enhancers, but none could compare to all-natural biomolecular nutrition and the endurance and stamina they give you. His main three are Endurocene, Mega Gains, and Carniflex. Endurocene helps transport oxygen to the muscles, while Mega Gains keeps his blood sugar up for those longer races. Carniflex helps burn fat for energy rather than your body storing it. No other products on the market today give you the essential natural nutrients that biomolecular nutrition does. Biomolecular nutrition is not only ideal, but also vital when it comes to replenishing an energy-spent body or strengthening a compromised immune system. Whether you're competing in a major athletic event or just your everyday routine, I urge you to use Daniel Chapter 1's Sports Line products. They're all natural, safe, and they work. Call 1-800-504-5511. 800-504-5511.
Have you determined that you do not owe federal or state income tax, but now you're just not sure what to do with that information? Are you wondering how to operate in the real world as a non-taxpayer? Are you unsure what to say to people when they ask for your Social Security number or taxpayer identification number? If so, go to www.nontaxpayer.org. Nontaxpayer.org does not provide services to taxpayers. Nontaxpayer.org. It's about time.
Visit American Radio on the Internet at AmericanRadioShow.us.
And we are back, continuing a very pleasant interview with our special guest, Vernie Kuglin. Vernie, thank you so much for being on the air with me today. You've been a real joy. So you're at trial, and you give a day and a half of testimony, which now tell me how Cross went.
Well, Cross was really interesting because when they ask the questions on cross-examination, they want you to give yes and no answers, but generally the questions are such that either way you answer, you kind of dig yourself a hole. So on the cross, I attempted to keep interjecting when they were asking me what or trying to prove that I knew what the penalties were. I said, yes, if I was liable, I knew what the penalties were. And so there were a lot of objections by the United States Attorney on my answers. But we got through it. We got through it, and the transcript is out there on the Internet. I think that if you go to LarryBcraft.com, that there's probably a link to the transcript. So people say they find it interesting reading.
Yes, I've got it sitting on my desk, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. But I'd like people to know that with the trial, that it there was a lot, as you said, that we did a lot of preparation, but a lot of the preparation that I had to do was on my own balance. It's a scary thing to suddenly be facing 35 years in jail and $1.2 million in fines, which is what they said I was up against. And I did a lot of spiritual work. Don Winfield and his mother took care of me, really babysat me for the first week and a half because I had found out that I had no job because they took my passport away from me, and I had no attorneys because the attorneys I had been using were not criminal attorneys. So it took me about a week of really doing some deep spiritual balancing to get my equilibrium back in order to face the trial. But by the time the trial got here, I was in pretty good balance.
It does take a little while to psych yourself up for something like that.
Yeah, it does. And so anybody who's, you know, looking at this, it's not a walk in the park.
Hell of a growth process, though, isn't it?
Oh, Matt, yes, it is. And, you know, I'd go through the whole thing all over again for the wonderful things that I've gotten out of this. You know, there were a lot of, in the secular world, they would call them coincidences. In the spiritual world, you call them miracles. But I believe that, in retrospect, that the day I made the decision I was willing to go to jail, that the verdict of this trial was decided. And we had an awesome jury. It was just everything was lined up in place.
Now, obviously, the three jurors that sort of held the line initially
right
were really a godsend.
Yes, the first vote was 9 against me, 3 in favor. 4 hours later, it was 7 against, 5 in favor. And that night, one of the jurors had a dream about me, and she said the only thing that was coming out of my mouth was liable, liable. What makes me liable? And she went back into the jury room the next day and really dug into the whole issue of liability and then into the judge's instructions, jury instructions, and such like that. And by noon the next day, they came back with a 12 not guilty.
How did you feel at that moment?
Oh, it was numb. It was numb.
Almost anticlimactic after all you'd been through, huh?
It was, but the whole trial was just, it was just interesting. And I was so grounded going into it that I really, for me, it was, to a certain extent, a rather pleasant experience. But I had prepared and prepared and prepared. But it was very interesting. And I, like I said, I had a courtroom in which there was the judge allowed the trial to be done, and he stayed unbiased in the trial.
In other words, he allowed the defense to defend.
Correct. He allowed the defense to defend. He, you know, made the decisions that he made, but he didn't make them out of his own personal feelings, as I believe the judge in the Sim Cannon case did. Judge McCullough represented the court, and so I felt confident that I could get a fair trial in his courtroom.
Now, there's been quite a few trials like this where after an acquittal, I'm talking about quite a few over a number of many, many years, where the jurors, when interviewed afterwards, they were asked, after they acquitted, they were asked, are you going to file knowing what you know now?
Mm-hmm.
And many of them have said, well, knowing what I know now, I don't think I would like to file, but I don't want to go through what he or she just went through.
Right.
Was there any of that from the jury after yours?
There was a certain amount, and there was one juror, you know, that who really, it was the last juror to change his mind, and apparently it was, he still felt that there should be a requirement for me to pay, but he did agree that in, as far as the criminal intent, that he believed that I believed what I believed.
Well,
and that's what the criminal intent was about. Now, things that are happening after this, right now in the situation I am, is immediately after the trial, the IRS strong-armed my employer and told them that they, even though they have an exempt W-4 on file, that they will withhold from my check. And so withholding is happening.
Oh.
In addition to that, the years were 93, 94, and 95, there's a judgment against me, and I can't go into all the details, but it involved an issue where I didn't know we were in court. The court did not notify me. A judgment was made, and an attorney who did not have my power of attorney represented me. Anyway, so now my paychecks are $292.76 per month, per payday.
I've been where you've been. We're out of time. I'm sorry. We've got 7 seconds, 6 seconds. Thank you so much for being with me, all of you. Thank you, Bernie. See you next week.
American Radio, sponsored by Original Intent, produced by Patrick Lindstruth. Call screening by Carlos Torres. To comment on today's show, email comments at AmericanRadioShow.us or visit the American Radio Show website at www.AmericanRadioShow.us.